Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics.
Sean Payton was horrible in clock management. That should never be the case with this New Orleans Saints team.
Well, we're waiting.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into a brand new week of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive as we talk both local and national. And today, we'll split it up 50-50. We are going to talk local sports front. Some big news coming out of Carbon High. A new football and a new wrestling coach have been officially named, and we will actually be joined by Principal Chris Winfrey over the phone next segment. He'll break the news and give us the official announcement that's coming up here in just a few moments. And also, it is Monday. We typically save Monday afternoons for some basketball talk. What do you talk about as far as the NBA right now? There's not a lot, but we'll have an abstract conversation. I was watching old Utah Jazz games over the weekend. AT&T Sportsnet played a couple of classic games, and it made me start to think, who's the best Utah Jazz team? Not necessarily talent-wise, but the team that either exceeded expectations or at the end of the season you looked at it and said, it was a great year. Now, obviously, the first two teams that would come to mind would be the two Western Conference championship squads that lost to Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, and the Chicago Bulls. But over the weekend, I really got to thinking the 1987-88 Jazz that took the defending Los Angeles Lakers championship squad to the brink in the semifinals was a legendary squad. When you look up into the rafters at Vivid Smart Home Arena, you're going to see a lot of those same names on that roster. And again, they took that Laker squad seven games. It was one of the best Laker teams. It's one of the best basketball teams ever. They had Magic and Kareem. They had Worthy. It was a stellar squad. Now, an interesting tidbit about that Laker team, every series went the distance, but Utah had them on the ropes. It was a young Karl Malone. It was a 25-year-old John Stockton. That team has to be mentioned. And then if you go back to 2007... that's how close the Jazz were to winning a championship. They get to the Western Conference Finals against the Spurs. They lose to San Antonio in five games. They had an opportunity to win Game 4, which would have tied that series. There's no doubt that Jazz team with Deron Williams and Carlos Boozer, they would have steamrolled the Cleveland Cavaliers. I don't think there's any doubt there. So it'll be a fun conversation. We're going to talk Utah Jazz basketball. We'll also go over the possible start date or how the NBA could handle restarting the season if, in fact, it gets to that point. So we'll move to that in just a bit here on Drive Time Sports. In the meantime, let's take a look at the national sports headlines, and we will begin with the NFL. A couple of news and notes. The New England Patriots continue to get rid of familiar faces. They have released kicker Steven Gostkowski after 14 seasons. Now, there's no question that Gostkowski was definitely on the downhill slide of his career. At one point in time, he was automatic, and that wasn't necessarily the case over the last little while. Plus, he's coming off of hip surgery, which shortened his 2019 season to just four games. But he's been the full-time kicker for this team since 2006. That's when he replaced Adam Vinatieri. He's the franchise's all-time leading scorer, 1,775 points, 36 years old. Longest tenured player once Tom Brady left, and now he's gone as well. Gostkowski was going to count for about $4.8 million against the salary cap this season. So again, it is a no-brainer for the New England Patriots. They have nearly $23 million in cap charges for players not on their roster, which includes $13.5 for Brady. Now they don't have another kicker on their roster, but Nick Folk finished the season in that role last year, and he is still a free agent. So there are some options for the New England Patriots. But again, Steven Gostkowski gone after 14 seasons in the league. The Carolina Panthers made a trade today, but no, they did not trade Cam Newton. Instead, they deal another quarterback on their team, Kyle Allen. Washington will acquire Allen in exchange for a fifth-round pick. Washington didn't have any interest, according to multiple reports, including ESPN, in acquiring Cam Newton. And, of course, Cam has ties with Ron Rivera, as does Kyle Allen. Now, as far as this move goes, it tells you that the Redskins still have high hopes for Dwayne Haskins, and they want a quarterback who will compete with him, but has experience as a backup. Right? As far as I'm concerned, that's Kyle Allen to the T. In fact, he was really good as a backup just last season. The Panthers have now signed P.J. Walker out of the XFL. They did that today, and it gave them five quarterbacks on their roster, including Cam Newton. So Allen, immediately, he becomes expendable. Now, Carolina had signed the exclusive rights free agent last month, I believe it was, to a one-year deal. So he's going to be under contract. Allen was undrafted. Again, he gave some quality moments for Carolina. And now when you look at what Ron Rivera has, I like the quarterback lineup. I think they're putting Haskins in the right situation to succeed. Because you also have Alex Smith. And he's still trying to recover from a massive injury back in 2018. So you bring in Allen. He started 12 games. You have Alex Smith. You have Dwayne Haskins. I think you have a couple of class acts on this team for Haskins to learn from. And by not going out and acquiring someone, a veteran that is well-established in the league, I still think it works with the psyche for Dwayne Haskins. So I actually love the move by the Redskins to land Allen in a deal earlier today. And the only other news coming out of the NFL, the Los Angeles Rams released their new logo and colors today. Very mixed reaction. I'm sure you saw on social media, it was 2 weeks ago, this hideous Ram logo that was released. That logo was legit. It was. The only difference was it was a draft hat, and the draft hats all featured neon lights for Las Vegas. And so that Ram logo looked a lot like the Charger logo. It's cleaned up a little bit. I don't mind the rebranding effort at all. I think the color scheme is on point. It mimics the previous Los Angeles color scheme before they bolted for LA, and the secondary logo also holds a new-look Ram head. This is how starved we are for national sports right now. The free agent frenzy in the NFL has died down a little bit, so we're talking about the rebranding of squads. The Rams are not the only team that'll be getting new uniforms. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers will have new jerseys to introduce with Tom Brady here relatively soon. In fact, Brady's going to be able to wear number 12 because Chris Godwin, one of the best young wide receivers in the NFL, said he'll give up his number 12 to give it to Tom Brady. We could also expect new jerseys from the Atlanta Falcons and I believe the Cleveland Browns. Those are the four squads that'll be getting new uniforms. Those will be unveiled relatively soon, but the Rams were the first to release their new logos and color scheme today. That's a quick look at what's happening at the national sports front. Again, coming up on the show today, an announcement from Principal Chris Winfrey in just a moment. He'll announce the new football and wrestling coaches. We'll also talk NBA basketball. And if we have time, I want to talk about the best free agents still available in the NFL. Now that that frenzy signing period has kind of settled down, who are some of the biggest names that have yet to find a new home? If you haven't been paying attention, some of these names may surprise you. We'll talk about that when we return. It's a Monday edition of Drive Time Sports, and we're back right after this.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Forum Studios, 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. We finally have some local sports talk to get into on the show today. Of course, it's been extremely quiet on that end. Hopefully, we'll have a lot more in the coming days, but at least for right now, some exciting news coming out of Carbon High School. A new football coach and wrestling coach have both been announced, and to help introduce that news, we have Principal Chris Winfrey over the phone right now. Chris, always a pleasure to get you on. I appreciate you making time again today. Thank you.
Thanks, Jordan. Absolutely happy to be here. Always good to talk high school sports with you. We haven't had much to talk about in a while, so it's nice.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I know this is some exciting news as far as Carbon High School is concerned. The process to bring in a new coach at the varsity level, it's not an easy process. I know there's a lot of things that you guys have to do. But at the end of the day right now, we finally have a new football coach and a new wrestling coach.
Yeah, we do, and it's been a long time coming. As far as our football coach goes with the program from the fall all the way until now, and then obviously wrestling season just ended a little while ago. But it is quite a process to go through and post jobs and get the applications through and go through the interview process, and we've done that, and we are pleased to announce today that we have hired a new football head coach for our program. We've hired Phil Howa as our head football coach. We're excited to have Phil on board with us. And then our wrestling program, we have hired Ted Prettyman as the new head coach for our wrestling program.
Well, let's start with football. Phil Howa is a name that everybody in the Castle Country is well familiar with. He's been at Helper for well over two decades, if I'm not mistaken. And so it's a familiar name. It's a familiar face. How much of that played into the final decision to give this job to Phil?
I think that goes into it quite a bit. One thing that may not be known was also recently announced is that Phil Howa will actually be moving from Helper Junior High to Carbon High School as a teacher here, which for us as a staff at Carbon is something we really wanted. We wanted our head coach to be somebody who was in our building. That's actually more coincidental than anything. Not that those two went hand in hand, but we got word that Phil was going to be moving over here, and then the application process went through, and Phil was someone who applied. We interviewed him, and so it goes a lot into it. We like the fact that Phil's a known name. He's known by parents. He's known by players. Obviously, there's players here currently who played for him at Helper, but not just that. I mean, we were talking about possible second generations of kids here at Carbon High School whose parents played for Phil or who know Phil. He's a known name in the community, and that goes a lot into helping get that excitement and that energy that we like to have here at Carbon with regards to our football program.
Chris, I know that one of the things that we don't necessarily associate with high school sports, it's recruiting, right? Because that's a term that we use at the college level. But as far as the term recruiting in school is concerned, did that play a factor into it, making sure that we get the kids out to participate in football? Because as far as the struggles with Carbon High School football is concerned, a lot of it could be, we could point squarely to the fact that we don't have the largest number of kids coming out for the sport. I know there's a lot of talent walking the halls that don't play football.
Well, yeah, and I mean, for all of our coaches that we've had here at Carbon, this is something that they battle with all the time, trying to recruit kids, and I know that our Coach Huntsman and his staff have tried for years and years and years to convince kids to come out and play football, and they walk through the halls and you see these big athletic kids, and they play other sports, and they've been begging to try to get these kids to come out and play and join the program. And it's something that you don't think about really needing to do. You just figure, as a coach, I show up and my team is ready to go, and maybe I'll be cutting kids and things like that. But we've struggled trying to get numbers to come out, trying to run program with just 40 kids or 30 kids, and you're doing two teams, and we've got players playing both ways, and it's been something that's been a challenge here for a number of years, trying to get students to come out. And so we're excited. We think Phil will be able to do a lot with that, and we hope that the players will recognize that and make some decisions to come out and play. We hope that there's some players out there who've been thinking for a couple of years, man, I'd like to play football, and maybe now's the chance. We don't know, but we feel like Phil's gonna be one of those people who can maybe convince one or two other kids who haven't come out before to come out and play.
Did he say anything, Coach Howard? Did he say anything in the interview process that made you think, okay, that's our guy? What was it?
I don't know that there's anything specific that he said, other than his vision for the program and kind of what he wants to see from Carbon football was something that we were excited about. We had a really deep pool of candidates that we were looking at here at Carbon, and for some of them, we hope that they'll, you know, continue on as possible assistant coaches to help with Phil. We don't know as we go through that process of looking at assistant coaches, but just his attitude and his excitement, his enthusiasm about Carbon football, what he wanted to do with our program, and really his vision for what he saw Carbon could become. I think those are the big determining factors. Obviously, experience plays into that. He's been coaching for a long, long time. He's got some experience, not just at the junior high level, but also at the high school level a number of years ago. And so that played a huge role into it too. But I think as the committee looked over, you know, all of the candidates, we were just excited about the energy and the direction that Phil wanted to see our program go.
Again, our guest right now is Principal Chris Winfrey of Carbon High as we announce two additions to the Carbon High School coaching realm. The first, Phil Howe, football, and wrestling, as you mentioned, Ted Prettyman. He's going to be the next wrestling coach for the school as well. And so, Chris, again, another exciting avenue here. Last time you joined me on air, you had announced that former head coach Brock Fawcett was moving on, and now his replacement was actually a part of his staff last year.
Yeah, that's correct. Coach Prettyman was a part of the staff with Coach Fawcett, and Coach Fawcett's moving on, and so we have an opportunity here to bring in somebody who's been a part of the program. Again, he's a name that the players recognize and the parents recognize. His experience with our wrestlers is something that's huge. Wrestling is a little bit different animal than some of your other team sports, and so having somebody that not only understands wrestling, And Coach Prettyman has 40-plus years being involved with wrestling, not just in our area, but in other parts of the country as well. And so that plays a lot into it. But he's somebody who's been working with these players. And when you're a young player, or especially you look at our sophomores and our juniors, the ones who hope to be competing for state titles next year, we felt like bringing in somebody who already knows the players, knows the system, and can continue the things that Coach Fawcett has done, along with bringing some added new wrinkles to it, was really important to us.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that the wrestling program was moving in the right direction under Coach Fawcett. And obviously, with Coach Fawcett having to attend to some other duties in life, he was unable to continue as a wrestling coach. So I'm sure that was important, right, to at least continue the thought process, or at least the same thread that Coach Fawcett had laid out.
Oh, absolutely. You look at what the wrestling program did last year. We had players that were finishing, in the top three in their weight class at state, with some others that were just on the cusp of that. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, you can look at it as, well, we want to bring in someone brand new and go a totally different direction. But that's not what we felt like with our wrestling program. We wanted somebody who was familiar with these boys, who understood their strengths, and could really continue that. And the other side of it is, too, Coach Prettyman is familiar with, obviously, UHSAA is bringing on girls wrestling this next year. We're not sure exactly how that's going to look here at Carbon, but Coach Prettyman has been working with our female wrestlers as well and is familiar with them. And so we just felt like he brought that same thought process that Coach Fawcett had, but with a little bit different energy to the program that would really allow our boys to take our boys and girls to take that next step.
Now, with this being said, a couple of important hires, obviously, to the athletic realm. Is there any, I guess, timeline on when you can expect staffs to be filled out? Because that would be the next important step, I would assume.
Yeah, all of this is obviously really weird with what's going on right now with the coronavirus and the kids being out of the schools and the coaches not being in the schools. So I don't know how long the process may take, but obviously our first priority is we'd like to get both men into the building, get them the things that they need as far as keys and let them figure out what they have as far as supplies, if there's anything we need to order, what kind of camps do we need to get in place or try to schedule to get in. Obviously, with football, we were late to the game with a lot of things football related for the summer, so we want to try to jump on some of those things right away. And those are the things that the coaches and the athletic director can do before they even hire their staff. As far as hiring staff goes, usually it'll probably take a couple of weeks for us to get those staffs in place, and post the job and bring those in, interview candidates, those kinds of things. So I anticipate sometime in the next couple of weeks we'll hopefully have all that in place. But the priority right now, get the coaches in the building, make sure that they have everything they need, and then start having those conversations about what do we need to do as a school to support you in getting your programs ready to go for next year. Wrestling is a winter sport, so you know that one's got a little bit of time, but you and I both know football, we should already be having our athletes out there doing 7-on-7s and weightlifting and things like that, which we can't do because of coronavirus. So these coaches will have some unique challenges on how to get their athletes ready for a season when we can't even get players in the building.
Definitely weird times, to say the least. And while I have you on the phone, I mean, I guess we could talk about the transition that the high school teachers have had to make. I know we've talked to Superintendent Dr. Lance Hatch several times. How are things going at Carbon High?
It's been great. I have been nothing but impressed with our teachers, and I know Superintendent Hatch has talked about this too, but just across the board, teachers here at Carbon High School, they were given a situation that is impossibly difficult for anyone to imagine. I've had experience teaching online classes at the college level, but I have months and months and months to prepare. We gave our teachers days and said, get ready for your students to do online classes. And the feedback that we're getting from students has just been wonderful. Especially the appreciation they have for their teachers and what they're doing. And as an administration, we cannot say thank you enough to the teachers, to our custodial staff, to our paraprofessionals, our secretaries, our lunch workers. I mean, delivering lunches to students all over the district, it's just been amazing. It's definitely strange, and I wish I could say I knew how long this was going to last, but I don't. But our teachers are just, they're in for the long haul, and they're ready to do whatever it takes to make sure the students at Carbon High School succeed.
Again, Principal Chris Winfrey of Carbon High, our guest today. Chris, it's a pleasure to get you on. Thank you for sharing the good news, and I look forward to more conversations in the very near future.
Yeah, absolutely, Jordan. Happy to be here. Reach out to us anytime.
We've got a break for just a moment. When we come back, we're going to talk NBA basketball. Not a lot to talk about, right? I know. We're going to have an abstract conversation about the Utah Jazz. What was your favorite Utah Jazz squad? A team that maybe could have won an NBA championship? Or what about a team that that most impressed you, I guess, by the final result? We're going to have that conversation when we return, and we'll look at the odds of getting a conclusion to the 2019-2020 NBA season. That's coming up next when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
With the sixth pick in the 2014 NBA Draft, the Boston Celtics select Marcus Smart from Oklahoma State University.
This is Marcus Smart from the Boston Celtics, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Marcus Smart, what a spin move and a finish! Hard to handle Marcus Smart, whether he's outside or inside the paint.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, KOAO, 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I'm looking forward to this next segment, Abstract NBA Conversation. We're going to talk Utah Jazz basketball, and we'll also talk about the current state of the NBA. Will we get the conclusion of the 2019-2020 season? Joining us right now to talk about that and more, we have Jameson Welsh. He joins us each week to discuss NBA basketball. And Jameson, it's a pleasure as always. I appreciate the time again. Thank you.
Oh, not a problem. Thanks for having me as always.
Jameson, you and I were having a conversation. Yesterday, AT&T Sportsnet began playing some classic Utah Jazz games to give us that basketball fix. Obviously, here in the state of Utah, if we talk professional sports, no disrespect to RSL, but we have the Utah Jazz, and then there's everything else if we're talking professional sports. And so I know it is hard right now for Jazz fans. It's hard for NBA fans all over, but really in this state, this is kind of what we pride ourselves on. It's Utah Jazz basketball. And without it, you really start reminiscing. And so you and I were talking about some of those classic Utah Jazz squads. And while this team has never won an NBA championship, they've had a couple of instances in a couple of teams that I don't believe get talked about enough. I mean, this is a franchise that has been close on multiple occasions.
Yeah, I mean, when you look back on it, they're a top 10 NBA franchise just based off of, you know, being consistent for the most part. Like, they don't have a whole lot of down years or down periods in their history. They've been pretty consistent, and they put together a pretty good product. Now, a big part of that is having two first ballot Hall of Famers play for 15-plus years on the same team. So that definitely helps. But when you look at the situation, like, they've been in the mix, and I'll give you one better. Those teams in 08, 09, you know, if they don't run into Kobe Bryant, like, we have a different conversation because those teams are very, very good. They just ran into the wrong guy at the wrong time.
Really, there was about three seasons where the Jazz ran into the wrong guy at the wrong time, and I think you're point on. You can't forget during that stretch where the Lakers went to three straight NBA finals and won two. Kobe Bryant, hands down, was the best player in the NBA, and the Jazz just happened to run into him each of those three seasons. Now, I know in that third year, they were the eighth seed, but you got to remember, that was an eighth seed that won 50 games as well. So it wasn't like this was an eight team that just barely snuck into the playoffs. And at that particular time, you had a very, very good player. You could have made the argument that Deron Williams was a top point guard in the NBA. So even then, I'm glad you bring up those three seasons, because those were both very efficient Jazz teams, and had it not been for Kobe Bryant, who knows where they were at.
They had two Team USA guys. Remember, O'Core was really good for a stretch. Karolinka was good for a stretch. So they had a team that was really good. Like, you know, that top four in that era is just as good as anyone else in top four. Like, when you look at it, when you break down the rosters like that, and with the coaching they had, they were really good. They just, you know, ran to the wrong team at the wrong time. But it happens, though. You know, a lot of teams, I mean, the Kings are another team that had some really strong years, but just ran to the wrong team at the wrong time. And if they were in a different era, who knows how many championships they would have had, and who knows what happens with history. But one of the years with the Jazz that doesn't get talked about as much is probably 07, because the bracket broke right for them. You know, the Mavs won like 67 games that year, 67, 68 games that year. And, you know, they lost in the first round to Golden State. And Golden State was a feel-good story. They had the perfect matchup for the Mavs. Not necessarily for the Jazz, even though they kind of, you know, lost a couple games they should have won. But that being said, they got the right matchup, and they got to the conference finals, and they just went against the Spurs team that had been playing together for almost a decade, and it didn't work out their favor. But they were right there, and if they win that series, they win a championship.
Yeah, there's no question. You go back to that team, Deron Williams, Carlos Boozer, Mehmet Okur, Andre Kirilenko, Derek Fisher was in that squad. You had Matt Harpring. Harpring was averaging double figures point-wise, and also was definitely an asset on the defensive side of the court for the Jazz. Gordon Giritschak came off the bench. You had Paul Millsap and Ronnie Brewer. It's a pretty solid team, and as you alluded to, they just ran into the San Antonio Spurs. And I remember that season. I remember it vividly. After the Jazz got by Houston in the opening round, the matchup with Golden State, that was definitely one of those that worked out of their favor. They took care of business against a feel-good story. Then they run into San Antonio. And in my mind, that series against San Antonio was more feasible that they could win this game and then waltz their way to a championship than it was defeating Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls in a seven-game set. To me, that's as close as the Jazz have ever come to winning a championship, and it doesn't get talked about enough.
Well, I wouldn't say the closest, because when you get to game six and you're up under a minute to go, I mean, that's closer than anything. I mean, that, you know, you can't really get any closer than that, because you get a game seven at home and you take your chances. But the situation was a lot, you know, the situation was a lot more easier to navigate in 07 than it was in 97 and 98, you know, for the Jazz. But, you know, when you're up in the game six, and I'm sorry to bring this up for the Jazz fans out there, but when you're up under a minute to go, and, you know, you have a situation where you really don't get, like, a shot off, that's a problem. But that's a totally different sort of different day. But, no, that 07 team is the team that you kind of look back on. That 07 year really was wide open. It almost similar to this year. Like, I mean, kind of, the league was kind of open. You had a lot of teams kind of in flux and in the, you know, midst of changing and everything like that. You had the Heat, who were the defending champs, that pretty much were died out, and they ended up trading people and whatnot. So this was a situation where this was wide open to the Jazz right there. If they would have, you know, if they were able to extend the Spurs out a little bit more, who knows what happens. But the Spurs have had that chemistry and that championship pedigree, and they weren't going to lose.
I don't know if you remember game four of that series with San Antonio, but the Jazz were down one going into the fourth quarter. The series was 2-1 in favor of San Antonio. The Spurs had won the first two games at home. The Jazz take game three. They're down by 1 point going into the fourth quarter of game four. They win that series. They shorten it 2-3. You go back on the road to San Antonio with a guy like Deron Williams, and at that particular time, a guy like Carlos Boozer. They win game four. There's a very realistic possibility they find a way to at least take that series seven. San Antonio didn't want to come back to Utah for game six. I guarantee you that.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, and also, the longer a series goes on for the older team, the better it is for the younger teams. Like, the Jazz had nothing to lose. You know, they're playing with house money. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, the series they won in the first round versus Houston, and Houston was up 3-2 in that series, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yep. Tracy McGrady couldn't finish it out.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, the Jazz were playing with house money at that point. You know, they were playing with house money. So anything that comes about it, it's all good. And when you have a situation like that, the longer you extend a series, the better. And also, that guys that can really play. Like Boozer was a really good player at that time. You know, Kirilenko was a very good player, but Tim Duncan was really good. Ginobili was really good. Parker was really good. So it was tough to overcome that. But no, they were there. They were there. They just couldn't necessarily close it out. But I still contend though the 98, that was there for a taking, and we'll see a documentary on that very shortly, probably in the next month or so. But with that being said, when you're up in a game six in an elimination game with the basketball, you got to find a way to close that out, and they just didn't. And I think if they win game six, they probably win game seven because the Bulls were done. Like, you know, Michael was done. His, you know, Scottie's back went out. Rodman was Rodman and not the good Rodman. So like, there's a lot of things that were there for the Jazz, and that was probably their closest part of winning a championship. They just couldn't finish it off.
Again, Jamison Welsh, our guest right now, as we talk the history of Utah Jazz basketball and some really close teams. One of the teams that does not get recognized, and it's because they lost in the second round of the NBA playoffs, it's the 87-88 Jazz. All right, and if we have some of the younger Jazz fans out there who probably don't remember that series, I mean, I was 2 years old when this series took place, but they fell to one of my favorite teams of all time, and that's the 87-88 Lakers squad. They were the defending NBA champs. Ironically enough, every series that year for the Lakers went to the distance. If it was game five of the opening round, if it was game seven in the second, game seven in the conference finals, game seven in the NBA finals, the Lakers won the final game of the series, all the which way. The Jazz really pushed them in that series. And even going into game seven at the Great Western Forum, I believe the Lakers won by like 11 or 12 points in that game. The reason why this team is so fascinating to me is when you take a look at the Raptors at Vivint Smart Home Arena, these names hang in the rafters. They were on this team. So you have Karl Malone, who was 24 years old that season. He averaged 28 points a game. His number's hanging up in the rafters. John Stockton, he was 25 years old. He averaged 14 points. And when you take a look at the assist total, through the roof, 14 assists per game. His number's up in the rafters. Mark Eaton played all 82 games that year for the Jazz. He averaged 7 points, 8 rebounds. He also averaged almost 4 blocks per game. His number's in the rafters. Daryl Griffith, coming in off the bench, played over 50 games that season. He was averaging double figures. His number is hanging up in the rafters. When you take a look at the coaching staff, you had Frank Layden. Okay, Frank Layden's number is hanging up in the rafters as well. So, historically speaking, that's a Utah Jazz squad that, in my mind, it's one of the best of all time within the franchise. And, Jamison, the only reason we don't talk about it is because they lost in the second round. But they had the elite group of Magic and Jabbar on the brink of elimination.
So here's the situation. So I'm glad you brought this up. So I had the fortune, I was fortunate enough to talk to someone who played in the 80s. Right when the playoffs were going on in the late 2000s. He played for the Bulls and a couple other teams. And he was like, Lakers were taking Houston Rockets 7 in the 09 playoffs. He was like, I was like, you know, this is kind of ridiculous. They're a much better team. He's like, Lakers have always done this. They've always played with their food because they know they can. And I was like, oh, okay. He's like, at the end of the day, when you have those kind of teams and that kind of talent, there's a switch that they can turn on at any time. And sometimes they don't feel like putting their best foot forward until it's absolutely necessary. So, yes, there might be an up-and-coming team that is feeling themselves and playing well, but at the end of the day, the superior team, like the Lakers, knows they can hit a switch, get everything together, and win any game they need to, and that's what they did in that particular postseason. So I actually remember that when you brought that up, because he was like, yeah, even in the 80s, it was just like that. They would coast the first couple quarters, and then they'd turn on the second half, and they'd win by 15, 20 points, and that'd be that. And even though that Jazz team you did mention was a stacked team, you look at it, it had some guys on there. And next thing you know, this is one of those situations to where they just, you know, they were building something, but they weren't quite there yet. And that Lakers team, like you mentioned, was one of the best. I think the 86-87 team was probably the best because Kareem was a little bit better than he was the season after. But, yeah, that 86-87 Lakers team was probably the best team of all time, but that's a different conversation for a different day. But the Jazz team, they were there, but at the end of the day, we knew that they weren't going to, you know, be successful. Like, we knew that.
There was hope. There's no doubt there was hope. I mean, they took care of business at home in that series when they forced a game seven, had the Lakers on the brink. But like you said, a little too young, a little too green for the moment. Still, it's a fascinating Jazz team. And again, for the younger Jazz fans, I encourage you to do your research on that particular squad because, again, it is historical. When you take a look at the Raptors and you take a look at the players that have great meaning to the Utah Jazz franchise, a lot of them were associated with that particular team. And they also had Daryl Dawkins coming in off the bench. Didn't have a huge role on that team. I think he only played played in like four or five games that season, but he was also coming in off the bench for the Jazz on that squad as well. So nonetheless, a fun Jazz team to take a look at. Jameis, if we could step away from the abstract talk here for just a moment. As far as the NBA season is concerned, I'm not willing or ready to say the season is done just yet, because obviously Adam Silver can do anything that he wants to do at this particular time. On your end, what have you heard, and is it at least possible that we get a season rolling within the next month and a half?
I think there's a possibility. However, we can't just flip a switch and say, hey, the season starts in 30 days or 2 weeks or whatever, because one, you got to have training camp again. Like, you got to get guys back together with their team and make sure that guys are, you know, ready to play. Secondly, and most importantly, is, you know, if you start a season back up after having basically a month or two off, there's going to be a lot of soft tissue injuries. There's going to be a lot of injuries that are very, very tough to deal with. And it can happen to anybody. It can happen to any team. So that's something to focus on. But the key thing is no more positive tests for players. If there's any more positive tests, it really reduces the chances of the season resuming. It really does, because this is hard to be like, all right, we got to quarantine this guy for another 2 weeks. They got to quarantine this guy. You know, it's tough. And then whoever they've been in contact with, if they've been in contact with other players or whatever, it's just a really tough thing to deal with. So, one, the first and foremost is they got to make sure that all the players don't have it. They got to make sure of that. And then secondly, most importantly, the venues. What do they do about the venues? Because most of these venues do other stuff besides basketball. So, if they're already booked or they already have things on the schedule that they can't remove, then what? So, it's a really tough task. I think we have a drop date of May 1st. May 1st is like the drop date, because once you get to May 1st, you kind of have an idea where this thing is going, and then you can make a decision based off of that. But as of right now, me personally, if I had to bet money, I would say they're resuming, but I would not be confident in that.
Jameson Welsh, again, our NBA insider, always kind enough to take out the time to join us on the show. Jameson, I appreciate the time, and I will be doing it again real soon. Thank you.
Not a problem. You have a great day.
You as well. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We're back on Drive Time Sports. I'm going to wrap up this Monday edition of the show. I'm going to bring in Travis Anderson to help do that. Travis, as far as the NFL is concerned, tell you what, it's settled down just a little bit, but there's still some big free agent names out there that haven't found a new home yet. And you get this every NFL free agency period. I know that this happens, right? Because the market changes by the year. It's not something that you can really predict. But there are some well-known free agents still on the board, starting with Jadeveon Clowney with the Seattle Seahawks, a guy that they really didn't trade a whole lot for. I believe it was a third-round pick, if memory serves me right, to bring him over from the Texans. He proved exactly what we knew, right? When this guy's healthy, he is a difference maker, but that's a big if. When he's healthy. To me, he's got to be the best free agent out there that's available, and probably Jameis Winston as well. Two names that don't have homes yet.
Yeah, two guys, like you said, that don't have homes. I think the perfect fit for Jameis Winston, I'm going to say Pittsburgh. I think that fits well. Ben Roethlisberger's 38, coming off an injury. I think that's a position where, you know, he has to look at that team and that situation. And then you talk about Clowney. I think when it's all said and done, I think he re-ups in Seattle, but he's got to be the best guy still on the board that's left out there.
I also like Ndamukong Suh.
Yeah, I think that guy could help a Super Bowl contender.
I agree. And this is kind of the reoccurring trend for Sue. Now, he's played for three teams in 3 years, don't forget. He went from the Dolphins. He waited very late in the free agency period that he signed with the Rams. He leaves the Rams. He waits until very late in the free agency process. He signs with the Buccaneers. Now, once again, he's waiting. So you take a guy like Gerald McCoy. McCoy signs a deal with the Cowboys. He signed very early with Dallas. And now Ndamukong Suh lets the market get set. This is all calculated. Ndamukong Suh is a very smart businessman. He's proved that over the last few years.
He's a durable player.
He's durable.
Hasn't missed a game since 2011. No. Last year, 41 tackles, 2.5 sacks, 2 defensive touchdowns. You and I were
there for one.
For one. So, yeah, I think Suh, I think that, you know, re-signing with Tampa Bay, it would be perfect for him.
I don't think he signs with Tampa.
I don't either, but he should, but I don't think he does.
You know, well, he should have re-signed with the Rams last year. He didn't do that either.
And he didn't, no.
He waits. he finds the right spot. I'll tell you one of the rumors that keep popping up, and Ndamukong Suh of the Dallas Cowboys, because the Cowboys are still looking for some defensive front help. Dontari Poe is another one that has been rumored to go to Dallas. But I like Ndamukong Suh. I really do. I think that there's still some quality football left to be played with this guy. Unfortunately, right now, he does not have a home. Robbie Anderson, here's a guy you're familiar with. He's only 27 years old. Wasn't bad late in the season last year. The Jets weren't bad late in the season last year. They got off to a slow start. They weren't bad late in the season.
Finished strong for Robbie Anderson. Just the market never, you know, materialized for him. I think he thought that, you know, it was going to open up big wide receiver money, and it just never did. I think his best bet's a one-year prove-it deal with the Jets and then head into the free agency again next season. Because I don't think any team's going to pay him what he's looking for long-term.
Well, look, that's the same problem with Jadeveon Clowney. Clowney wanted, what, $20 million a year? He's not going to get that on the market. It's not going to happen. All right, so as far as Robbie Anderson is concerned, yeah, I'm with you. But again, the market for receiver, it is collapsing a little bit. The same way it was collapsing with the running backs. I don't want to talk about the Todd Gurley deal once again, but the fact remains, this guy's 25 years old. He got a one-year, $6 million deal. Okay, so as far as the money that Robbie Anderson is looking for, you have to look at the market. Emmanuel Sanders, Randall Cobb, neither one of them got huge deals. Cobb got a three-year, $27 million deal from the Texans, only $18 million guaranteed. And Sanders had to settle for a two-year, $16 million deal with the New Orleans Saints. Now, he went to a situation where he took less money so he could potentially win a Super Bowl. I get it. But look, to me, Robbie Anderson's not in the same category as Emmanuel Sanders. I think he's better than Randall Cobb, but I don't know that he gets $18 million guaranteed. And at this point, it may be in his best interest to take a one-year prove-it deal. Now, you're betting on yourself when you do that. But again, just looking at those dollar amounts, I think it's probably best for him to take a one-year prove-it deal. I agree with you.
Yeah, I think that's his best bet. He's just not going to get anything long-term. And, you know, possible teams, I guess, Jets, Green Bay, Minnesota, they could use some wide receiver help. But again, those teams are not going to give him what he's looking for, and that's long-term.
Yeah, Breshad Perriman is the same in the same boat. Okay, because last year, Tampa Bay, and that's where Perriman was, they put up really good numbers as far as that team was concerned. They put up good numbers. He had a career high in receptions. He had a career high in yards. He had a career high in touchdowns. But as far as Anderson is concerned, he's better than Perriman, mm-hmm. and that market isn't there.
No, it's not there. These guys thought it was going to be there. It's not. And now, you know, they're going to kind of scramble to find a place. So
you know what doesn't help? Very deep as far as the draft is concerned at wide receiver as well.
Yeah, because I think that's a Jets situation. Like, well, we'll let him test it because picking 11, we can get a wide receiver to, you know, replace Robbie Anderson. We don't have to pay him what he's looking for.
Defensive side of the ball, Everson Griffin is still a free agent. I like Griffin. He did have a steep drop-off of the Vikings last season. Jimmy Smith is still a free agent. I don't know what the defensive back market's going to look like for a 32-year-old, but I believe that Jimmy Smith has a ton of talent. But every team interested in him, they're really going to have to look at his injury history, and that's the one thing you don't have to pay attention to with Ndamukong Suh. Right? I know it's a completely different position, but Suh has played 130-something straight games. Jimmy Smith, that's not the case. And another guy that I like, but controversy surrounds him, it's Eric Reed. Eric Reed is still out there as well. A lot of secondary options remain on the board. A lot of secondary options.
And those are, you know, key guys that if you get and their heads are there, like, you know, an Eric Reed, it can help you win a Super Bowl or, you know, help you win a lot of games. So, yeah, it's just question marks with some of these guys with their heads and that sort of thing. But Eric Reed, I like Eric Reed as a player, but there's just so much baggage that comes with it.
Logan Ryan. I like him. I like Logan Ryan. I like him a lot. He's still out there. So the point is there's still some options out there free agency-wise. There will be a couple of stories that still pop up. Just about out of time on this edition of the show. Travis, before we end it, Ram new logo, yay or nay?
I like the Ram itself.
The
I don't
secondary
like,
logo?
Yeah, the secondary logo. I don't like the primary logo, the LA one, but the secondary one will eventually replace the primary logo.
I agree. Who are you most looking forward to seeing the new jerseys, new logos from? Tampa Bay, Atlanta, Cleveland, or the Rams? Because we haven't seen the Ram jerseys yet.
Haven't seen it. I'm going to go with the Rams, but you know, you and I have heard the Chargers new uniforms are pretty good.
They said
the Browns kind of melded in. The Patriots are going to get a new look. The Colts are going to get kind of an updated look. But I want to see the Rams jerseys with the colors because the colors are awesome. The logo stinks. The secondary logo is awesome.
Out of time of this edition of the show. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.